Podcast meeting brilliant minds and looking at the world around them. How do they 360 themselves and 360 the world? Jamie Neal, the host, asks many questions about their mindset and how they fundamentally operate their world and the world around them. Hello and welcome back to 360 Yourself. I hope you're having another beautiful morning. I am back in Devon. Last time I think we spoke, I was in Devon and now I'm back in London. The sun is kind of a bit cloudy today. I always go down about sun, you know, because I think the weather really affects your mood and definitely affects my mood. But I hope, again, you've taken the moment in the morning or the afternoon or the evening just to actually sit and reflect about what's actually happening with your body, where you carry tension, if you've had a good day, if you had anxiety, all those sort of things. I think we need to do more in our lives. And anyway, but moving slightly forward, I am super, you can tell that I'm really excited, to announce and also deliver this amazing message that I am talking to the DP who has been involved with Hollywood, Pose, the politician. He also did Peaky Blinders. He's done so much amazing, brilliant stuff on Netflix. And also, he's a local. He's from Devon as well. So I want to introduce you to Simon Dennis. Hello, Simon. How are you doing?
Hello. Good evening.
How are you doing? We're calling you all the way from LA, and we were just chatting beforehand about how LA is doing. How is your life going at the moment?
It's good. It's good. I mean, I'm keeping to myself. I'm keeping super safe. People might have heard the news very recently that the numbers have increased, particularly in California, of the COVID. So it's a little scary, but I'm kind of keeping kind of, like you said, my mental health. I'm trying to keep busy, trying to keep a little mantra every day of keeping going out. I go out for a 5-mile walk every day, clear my head, you know, then kind of knuckle down and just do some reading or, you know, watch a documentary or what have you. So yeah, just kind of, it's just kind of keeping a timetable. Otherwise, I think we spoke earlier that every day could feel like a Sunday, which is a good thing too, I think.
Yeah,
you know, if you want to let it be that way in your life right now.
Yeah, because I always say to all my friends at the moment that I literally just, I'm saying yes to life, and I'm just going, if I want to go to Paris for a week, I'll go for there for a week, because I don't need to be anywhere. So you can kind of shape your life however you want, because nothing's running like normal. And yeah. And that also can give some people anxiety because it's the unknown, but also can give some people the thrillment of freedom.
Yeah, I think it's a very dark time, but it's a very enlightening time for a lot of people that I speak to. And even myself, you know, you get all this time to, you could either get stressed out about it or you could just knuckle down and just think about things that you've not done or, you know, giving yourself challenges, you know, just stuff that you sort of put off in your busy, busy life that you've had.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I've just been kind of, I mean, I'm not a Buddhist, but I do coin the phrase Zen a lot. You know, I try to think about floating over things, not through things, you know, kind of feel that's my sort of mental approach most times. And it's come into use, you know, over this really weird, strange time.
Yeah. When did you kind of start going into kind of mindfulness, zenful place? Have you always kind of practiced that, or is it something quite recent?
I think I've always sort of had that. It's a weird thing, and it's hard to describe, but I sort of almost take a step back from myself whenever I got into the business like 20 years ago.
Hmm.
And initially I wanted to be a graphic designer when I left school, and I was a bit of a daydreamer at school. And I think maybe that's still kept with me. I sort of daydream a lot. You know, I kind of just, I don't really like things to affect me. And I sort of deflect a lot of things that people take personally. And I think over the years, working in film and TV, you know, my sort of my way of working sort of gave me more confidence in a way. I just sort of, it's almost like, it sounds strange, but it's almost like removing yourself from a care factor. Like,
yeah,
if something's going to go wrong, it's going to go wrong. But don't kind of pent yourself up in the morning thinking, I'm going to wake up and today's filming is going to be horrible. And, you know, it's just always go in there with a sense of positivity, you know, positive energy. And then I think that, to me, rubs off on a lot of people that you work with. And then the energy turns into something else on set, and it turns into, you know, it can sort of help make the projects better.
No, it's so true that
being positive in general.
I think a lot of people need to kind of reassess the way that they, one, live their lives, but also professionally going into projects, is actually have a very positive outlook. Because I think if you do wake up and you're like, oh no, I've got this shot, I don't know how to make it work, or we're doing 12 hours or 15 hour shoot days, I think people definitely feed off that energy. And I think even if you don't have to be, as you say, you don't have to be a Buddhist monk, or you have to don't preach kind of spirituality, but a simplest kind of form of just going, I'm just going to think positive. And that's just kind of the simplest kind of thing to do it every single day.
Yeah, totally.
But
yeah.
Like, so when you do your walks, where do you drive for 5 hours? Because obviously I've been to LA many times, and obviously you need a car to get around anywhere. Where do you go for your walks?
So we were just about to start a project in March before COVID hit, and I normally Airbnb or rent somewhere, and I ended up in this little cottage in Venice. Mm-hmm. So I'm like two blocks from the ocean, and right outside my window is, I don't know if you've ever been to Venice, but Venice obviously is based on Venice, Italy. It's like there's a canal system that, it's actually a lagoon actually, but there's a canal system that weaves through wet Venice. And it, you know, on any given day, it could be a 90 minute walk just to go all the way around I don't even drive. I just walk out the side of my door and I'm at the canal, and I basically walk through the canal system. And there's many dog walkers and joggers and stuff. It's really pleasant. I got really, really lucky. Ultimately, you know, alternatively, if you're in the center of LA, there's not much to escape.
Yeah. Because that's what I always feel whenever, because I love being in London. I love walking everywhere. And every time in LA, as much as I love it and I love the scene, I'm always very frustrated that I can't walk anywhere.
Yeah.
That's my thing. But
if you do travel somewhere where you get a bit of space, it takes a bit of time, you know?
But yeah.
I got very, very lucky. It's funny you should mention that you're in Devon, because I'm from Devon.
Oh, really?
I'm from Sidmouth in Devon, my hometown.
Oh, so, I'm from Plymouth.
So I've always lived on the coast when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And when I went to when I went to film school, which was in Edinburgh, which is technically, you know, a coastal town, so you can go down to Leith. I've always had that, and I've always sort of pushed hard, no matter the consequences, to be near the ocean. It's just a thing that I like. It's pure escapism. People like to live near parks. That's great. But to me, it's just, you know, being here. Of course, you need the bonus of LA. You get the consistently great weather.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's actually cooler on the Venice side of LA. So,
oh really?
Yeah, it's like sometimes 10 degrees cooler, and you know, and then you got all the whole vibe here, which is very kind of like, you know, surfers and hippies, and it's just, I'm not a hippie, but
no,
I think mentally I'm a hippie.
That's good though. I think you need, you know, that, you definitely need that balance, because obviously I think the industry that you work in can get so consuming, so I think being by nature and that sort of thing can
I think it's worth the sacrifice. I mean, you mentioned London, actually. The closest I ever got to London was Brighton. Again, I was right on by the sea. So I mean, some people dive straight into the cities and, you know, what we used to call the rat race, of course. But I just never thought I would get mentally through that. So I felt that for the sacrifice of being, say, in Brighton to London, whenever I work, I would go in. But it's always a peace of mind. I mean, I was chatting to a friend the other day, and she said, I think I'm going to live 10 years longer being in Venice.
Maybe,
there's a flow here that's so nice.
And, yeah.
It's worth it, even if you have to go into work.
Yeah. And so when
but my job's very kind of flexible, you know. I don't know where the job's going to be.
Yeah,
you know, it could be in a studio, it could be north of LA, south of LA. I did a shoot in New York. You know, it takes me everywhere. So, but I feel that your home, your base, should be ideally a tranquil place.
I agree. So where does it all start then? Because you're from Devon. Where did it? Because obviously you wanted to become a graphic designer. Where did the want to become a cinematographer? Yeah. Where did that all start?
Well, I did a bit of a journey actually. I went to art school. Basically, I was like, I want to be a graphic designer, and that was it. The only thing I was great at school was art, and particularly graphic design art. Mm-hmm. And I also knew when you start to leave school, they give you, you know, career advice, and they say, well, that's a pretty dependable job. You can probably earn good money and all that. So I went to art school in Torquay, which is a strange part of the world. But I went there, and long story short, as a part of the remit, they asked you to shoot a 20-second video, like an adaptation that was from a book. So you took a passage from the book, and it doesn't have to be literal, it can be abstract, but they asked us to adapt it. Mm-hmm. So I remember going into the studio, my first ever, I mean, I've always been a movie fan, you know, like a lot of kids, you know, growing up, you know, I was always doodling and drawing little movie posters and stuff like that at art school. But I didn't really think it was a serious thing to go into. I had no idea. And so I did this little video thing, and then next thing I know, I had the bug. So I basically packed some lights into my car. I went, because I'd come home at the weekends, mm-hmm. in Devon, and I'd written this little script, and this is the funniest thing, my first ever gaffer, if everyone knows what a gaffer is, was my mum.
Oh no, really?
Yeah, and
that's
the
amazing.
The first ever star in everything I did was my brother. So
oh wow.
Me, my brother, my mum, my sisters were too young at the time. Basically made a short film, like a ghost story, over the weekend. And I stole from movie soundtracks when I was cutting it together. So basically, yeah, I went back to art school and they had a little edit suite. So I think I was just much more focused in the world of film, and I didn't give up art. It was always part of what I wanted to do. But mm-hmm. I then sort of basically went on a longer journey after that. I went to an audio visual course, mm-hmm. in Northbrook, mm-hmm. Worthing. That was like 2 years, and that was like a very, you know, I mean, it wasn't like a film school. It was more like, you know, little video cameras and a few lights and just a chance to express yourself. So I did that. That was great. And I think this is when I was starting to learn about being free and kind of easygoing and kind of like, you know, but passionate, you know, passionate mm-hmm. all the time. And then I went, basically applied to an official film school in Scotland, in Edinburgh, and I went to there. And at that point, I thought I wanted to be a director, actually. And at that point, they had a little remit where they got you to recreate a sequence through stills and lighting. And it was your chance to sort of basically be a cinematographer. And at that point, I was like, whoa, okay, I like this. And and then long, long story short, I left film school. We all graduated. And one of my friends bumped into a friend. I think we all felt like pushed out into the world at that point, and we were like, how does this work? Where is the door to the film industry? And there really isn't one, you know. It's just an abstract, it's abstract in a way, the film industry, because it's like, you know, it's multiple elements, but we didn't know that. And one of my friends bumped into a friend from EMI or Virgin Records, and they wanted to do a music video that weekend, and that was it. I was shooting music videos after music videos, did my first feature film in Glasgow. And then it kind of folded in from there, really.
Yeah, because I also heard from another podcast, actually, that I was listening to, of you, that when you finished Peaky Blinders, your friend was already working on, is it Hollywood, I think? And then they were, like, recommending to you. I think that's how it worked.
Yeah, no, it's kind of like that. It was a very bizarre story. And it to me, it was about a little bit like, there is about creating connections in this industry. Because obviously, like the old saying that I never really liked, it's like, not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
I never really liked that term. Because it really pushes you into a social arena that you don't particularly, I mean, I've never been to one social gathering or party. But what happened was, I did one episode of Doctor Who with Colin, the director. I did two episodes of a show called Ripper Street, which people might have heard of. Mm-hmm. Then it turned out that the director of Doctor Who, Colm, got Peaky Blinders. So I got an immediate fast track into like TV. I never thought I'd be in TV until I did Doctor Who. I did it kind of for a bit of fun because I as a kid. And then what happened was I spent a couple of years just on Facebook. This is not a Facebook promotion, but I basically realized that obviously you can, you know, connect with old friends and new friends. But I also found out that you could connect to technicians all over the world. So I started to basically connect with what ended up with like 2,000 connections of DPs, editors, focus pullers, grips, a lot of them in America, because I sort of had a plan that if ever I've got to America, then I've got a little pool of people that I can ask questions and, you know,
for sure, yeah.
Stuff advice. And then happened to be one of the people I friended along the way was a lovely chap called Nelson Craig, who is a cinematographer, and he was shooting Ryan Murphy's TV show, O.J. Simpson, the People versus O.J. Simpson. And then they were going to do this adaptation of the story of the assassination of Gianni Versace, which is a serial killing story.
Mm.
Under the banner American Crime Story. And literally, I'm in Devon. I think I just did a finish the shoot. And then Nelson, who's in LA, just said, hey, how do you fancy coming to LA and shooting a crime show? And it was the most bizarre message, because I was like, it was obviously I thought it was a wind up.
Was this on Facebook?
This was on Facebook, yeah. So back in the day, I used to post a lot, you know, not massive amounts, but occasionally I post a new link to a new thing that I've done. And obviously everyone, you know, checks things out, and Nelson had checked some of the stuff I'd out. And I think Peaky Blinders was actually the big turning point. And he showed that to Ryan, the showrunner and the creator and director. And that's how it happened. And then 3 weeks later, I was in LA shooting a massive crime drama.
And sometimes it's just, again, it's not who you know. It's not what you know. It's who you know. And
I'd also say that it felt like, you know, Nelson was some kind, I don't, you know, believe in angels, but he was a very, very kind individual who basically went out of his way to invite me over from another country when he could just go down the street and find a DP, you know, in LA.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I felt that it was a connection, but, you know, for instance, I didn't kind of message him. We'd never spoken at all. I think we just made friends on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so it was half and half, I'd say. It was like, I definitely promote the idea of like who you know. If you know these people, of course, you know, make use of them in a very kind.
But I was listening to a documentary about Ed Sheeran this morning, and he always says that if you're ready for the opportunity when it rises, when it comes, you've worked so hard to this point that when the opportunity comes, because you're so talented, because you've worked so hard, that's what pushes you into the next level, because you've already done all the hard work, and actually the opportunity has kind of given. Has helped you and pushed you into that next stratosphere, and it goes back to of course you need to know people, and it's good to know people, but actually if you aren't talented and you get the opportunity and you're not ready for it, then it doesn't matter how many people you know, because you're not ready for it.
Yeah, I mean I'm particularly humble about a lot of things, and I don't particularly kind of go out there blowing my trumpet, but to answer that question or that thing was, yes, I would be kind of like easy on myself. I'd say to people, I got really, really lucky because of this incident. And they said, well, no, luck only comes through from talent. You know, if he wouldn't have messaged me if he didn't think I was not talented.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't message any, you know, any random person.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I still came here with a very, very level head and a very kind of humble opinion and a very, like, you know, it's the next step of your life. And it's extraordinary. And you know, it connected to another. I mean, I've worked back to back for 3 years, so you know, I must be doing something right. And
yeah.
I think a lot of it is karma on set, how people judge you, and you know, if you just knuckle down and do a good day's work and go home, and you know, the industry is a little bit fickle, because if you start, you know, interacting socially with certain people, I mean, on a social level, not on a work level, it becomes personal, you know. So I sort of stepped back from all that from the last 3 years, and I just kind of got on with it, you know, just been enjoying the shooting.
Yeah, yeah. When you went over there, because it's a totally different market and different way of working, did you sort of have like imposter syndrome, going, oh my God, I'm here, I've not really worked in the American market before, it's a new thing, like, they got the right person. Have you ever had those sort of moments?
I sort of did. I mean, I remember driving up to Fox Studios and going to the gate and getting my pass and driving in and parking it up and going to this massive office. And I remember thinking to myself, keep calm, keep calm, keep calm. And then I was, half of my personality was like, is this really happening? Is this really happening? I mean, I don't know. I think at this stage, I was still pretty much kind of zen about it all. I was sort of like, I quickly learned actually that America is actually a better film system than the UK because of the amenities of the budgets of the schedules. They don't work you 6 day weeks. They work you 5 day weeks if you're on a good show. So you have some mental space at the weekend. They don't exhaust you. There's so many different departments to look after you. So I think it was like, yeah, the first day of shooting was nervous. I was like, oh my God, new kid in town. But I think it was like by the end of the first week where I hadn't been fired, I was like, okay. And then I quickly realized that there's so many resources at your disposal that everyone looks after each department. So you don't have to stress about the things I used to stress about, you know, whether the lights would turn up or whether a camera would be, you know, working properly, you know, all these things are kind of a, you know, the American film system, as you imagine, is very, very proactive.
Because I imagine that there's everyone for, as you said, there's everyone for a certain team. So it's like the whole saying, like, you can't pick up that light because that's someone's job to pick up that light. I imagine it makes your life a lot easier because you know that there's teams upon teams upon teams who have a designated thing to do that job.
Yes. I mean, before, I mean, I used to sleep on couches back in the UK doing low-budget movies, you know. And you end up sometimes doing two jobs, not one. And, you know, it's very, very demanding. But I think, you know, my journey from A to B has been long, but it's been sort of rewarding because I have come through that hardship of, you know, working for basically no money, sacrificing a lot. Sacrifice is a big thing.
Yeah.
If you really want to get through and jump the queue.
Yeah. What would you say was your biggest sacrifice that you've had in your from A to B journey?
Family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Family. Family, kids. You know, I put it off. I've sort of dedicated myself to this work. It's not that I'm, you know, that's not an impossible feat right now. Of course it is, you know, but I kind of, you know, I have a lot of good friends back in the UK who have family and kids. But then I've also got friends here who've worked, come over from the UK, and they don't have kids, mostly. And they're independent, you know, entities that, who can just go anywhere. You know, I can literally just pack a suitcase and go anywhere now. But a lot of people can't make those sacrifices because they've already made a sacrifice to something else, which obviously is equally important, you know, family. But, you know, I've kind of got with that. It's fine. It's cool. I mean, I kind of love what I do.
But also, you're never too old to have a family. I mean, as a male,
no,
you can. I have a friend of mine who was with someone for 45. They're both 45, and then 5 years later, she was just like, "I don't want a kid anymore." He was like, "Unfortunately, I want a kid." So unfortunately, they split, and then he moved to somewhere else, and then he had a surrogate kid at 50, and he was living his best life. And so I don't think you can ever rule it out, even though. That career, especially for Americans and also in London, where it's very career driven, it's quite difficult to have that balance of wanting to aspire to your dreams and all these amazing things, but also have that balance of having a family and kids and stuff. It's,
yes.
It's a lot of sacrifice.
It is. Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah.
I mean, but I still also know people who have families and still go to work and, you know, have. It's weird, you know, people can work out a pattern, a kind of a formula in life, and they make it work. And it largely becomes with an understanding between both parties to be upfront and clear with each other what they want to do.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have a family and you're sort of just drifting through life, and I mean, I actually remember being at school. I think we left school by a year. We're like 17, and one of my friends, I met him, and he had a beard. He had a this sounds really surreal, but he had a beard and he had a newborn baby. And I was like, oh my God, you're a dad. You're like all grown up. And I realized just how quickly that can happen, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas I think my sights were like way down the line, and my sights were much more focused on, you know, career. It's funny actually, because there's a term that I always remember, which is people either live to work or work to live.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can, if you can work to live, you're in a good place. But sometimes you have to live to work. You know,
yeah.
To get to a certain part of your journey. I mean, for instance, I do a very amazing, responsible job. It's incredibly creative and all that kind of good stuff. But I used to think I lived to work, you know, and now I work to live. I've managed to get over that hump where I've saved money. I have a good sort of lifestyle in a way here in LA, and it's all good. So you can sort of relax, even though you're doing a very intense job. I never think I'm going to be like, you know, completely obsessed with this job for the rest of my life. I think you should. You always need a balance in your head.
Yeah, but I think also you got to work your way up to that sort of point of being able to relax, to have that kind of money in your bank, and that the kind of
you have to work your ass off, basically.
Yeah, basically.
And I have, and I you know, I would say 6 years. So I've been doing this, I think, 18 years. I'd say 6 to 7 of those years was just pure sacrifice, sleeping on couches, earning no money. I even remember sleeping in a garage.
No way.
Yeah, that was just how rough it gets sometimes when you just want to get a show reel together as a DP or learn or get experience, you know.
But also that makes you more humble as well. But now you're living in America and you're doing like the biggest shows on Netflix. It makes you so humble because you know where you've come from.
Totally. And I still take that every day. You know, I find actually when you become a little bit more big headed or, I don't know, maybe aggressive, I find that that's a lot of energy, you know?
Yeah.
I meet people and I go, God, you must be exhausted at the end of the day being this way. It's, why don't you just kind of relax?
Yeah. But also, I have another thing
I find I can, go.
I have another thing that I think because you're from Devon. I don't know if this is about you, but every time I meet someone who's from Devon, we're all very humble, like-minded people. Like, I know very successful people, directors, DPs, like, designers and stuff, who've come from Devon, who I meet along the way in my career, in my life, and I'm like, oh my God, you're from Devon. And there's sort of the same energy, and I'm like, oh, maybe they think like me because we're all from Devon and we're very, I don't know, just humble. I don't know, because we've come from, like, a very small village. Like, there's nothing there. Yeah. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, I come up playing in hay bales in barns, you know. I wasn't a farmer's son, but, you know, I lived, you know, in rural, you know, in a rural town. And I mean, I was very playful as a kid, and growing up in that environment, I loved it. You know, I always actually say to a lot of American friends here, if I'm trying to describe Devon, I say, well, it's like kind of like the Shire in Lord of the Rings, you know. And it's that really nice green place before you get to Mordor.
Yeah, pretty much.
And, you know, and some people live in Mordor, but that's by choice. You know? But yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I think there's definitely like a character and attitude from where we've come from.
Yeah. And when you're like on set, or when you are working through things and you might get a bit stressed or have anxiety or whatever, how do you actually calm yourself? What is the one thing, apart from you go for your 5 mile walks, what else do you do to like calm yourself and just find your zen?
Well, when you mean when I'm shooting?
When you're shooting, or when you're in prep for production or anything like that.
I don't really get stressed. It sounds really odd. I mean,
that's nice.
I'm trying to give an answer so it would be helpful to people, you know?
Yeah, no.
I mean, I think what it is it's like self-control. You have to have like an inner control. Otherwise you start to kind of like, you feel your heartbeat, you know, racing. And what happens, I found whenever I have got sort of particularly stressed about something, and it could be something natural as a massive, you know, sequence in a TV show that needs a lot of planning and money and budget and so, is, you know, I just sort of tend to, what happens is that it can go the other way. It can cloud you over. I find I would get very cloudy mentally. And so I don't know. I mean, maybe I would literally just go outside and get 10 minutes of air. But I tend to, to me, I've sort of grown to discipline myself. And, you know, I think the two major things that I always say to people in the film industry is commitment and confidence.
Yeah, amen to that.
And you know, and there's other stuff like being a risk taker and expressing yourself, but all that stuff is an individual thing. Confidence just comes out of a way of, I mean, even if you are still learning or still coming up as a DP or as a whatever, confidence can take you a long way. I mean, I was speaking to a good friend here. He's about to start his first TV show as a DP, and he was asking me, what would you say is the key thing? And I just said confidence. You know, confidence is in yourself, and then confidence also is a reflection on other people. So if other people see you are confident, even if maybe you're not, you know, inside you could still be working stuff out. But if you have if you've taught yourself to be confident, you can pretty much tackle anything.
Well, especially, you know, being in America as well, they got full of confidence. They love people who are confident over there.
Oh, so everything's high five.
Yeah.
And totally. I mean, and I think that's also is helpful because I'm surrounded by so many people who are confident. Maybe half of them are in therapy. I don't know. But, you know, they're definitely confident.
Definitely. Most people are in therapy. It's such a norm over there, though, in America to have therapists.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's normal. I mean, the other thing is, I mean, I'm not to say that I'm going to damn where I've come from. I mean, I think I had an amazing upbringing in England, but it can be the thing where the class is half empty in England, whereas here, mostly the class is half full and everyone's pretty much game for anything, you know? Yeah. I mean, I think everyone loves a challenge here.
Mm-hmm. It must be so thrilling for you to be surrounded by that energy. It's always that sort of that notion when you say, surround yourself with like-minded people, because that's actually how you think.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's so many cliche sayings that when you get here, it's like if you put your mind to it, you can conquer anything. I mean, these are really cliche terms that you kind of go, okay. But actually, when you get into a room where you've got, you know, 75 crew members all, you know, working very hard and with a great attitude, there's nothing but a great time. And I always think, you know, enjoy your job. I mean, that's the other thing undermining everything, I think. Enjoy what you do, because sometimes you can lose sight of that enjoyment. Mm. You can start finding yourself in a very different space mentally.
Yeah, I had that.
And I just love having a good time. I'm not saying it's full of jokes on set, but I love a good, relaxed set. You know, people, I mean, I'm not a tyrant. I don't come in kind of giving, you know, a bunch of rules of how we work. I like everyone to express themselves. You know, I've learned a lot being here. You know, I used to be a camera operator on shows that I would DP, and now I've got people to do that for me, and it's their job. It's their living to, you know, frame up a shot and work together with all the other departments, you know. And I've worked on massive shows here with huge sets. But I remember actually coming back to, I remember a cinematographer telling me the difference between, you know, what you've done and what where you're going is you've had 10 lights and now you've got 200 lights. It's just math.
Yeah.
There's no difference. It's still the same, but it's just math. And also, you don't have to worry about that scale of things because you've got all these people to
worry about it for you.
To worry about it for me, it's their job. So basically, when you get all the departments carrying their own weight, which you kind of have to do, but you also, I mean, I'm a big collaborator, but when you're carrying your own weight, you just have the stress, if there is any, gets less and less.
Did you always want to move to America? Was that even in your plan?
I didn't have a plan. I didn't have like a 5-year plan. I kind of had a sort of notion that yes, I would definitely love to work here. In 2014, actually, when was this? I did a tiny movie in New Orleans. It was like a documentary style movie, and it was literally like a 4-week visit, you know, door to door, including prep. You know, we turned up. It was all documentary style, so it was really freeing. So I had an amazing time on that. It was just me and a camera operator and a director, and you know, it was so good. It was so much fun. So that was my first experience in America, and I thought, wow, you know, this is kind of cool. And I also got that vibe with Americans, like it was just an amazing kind of collaboration. So I already had a tiny taste of it, and then yeah, when I got this offer to come over, I was like, okay, good. It worked, you know. And I mean, maybe you alluded earlier, is like, you know, if you work, if you're talented, at some point, you know,
the break will happen.
Break, you know, if you're, I mean, people love people to come over from Europe. You know, for instance, I said to them, they were asking me about, it wasn't even an interview actually, because I was offered the show, the Versace show. And, but they were just chatting to me like, do you have kids and all that sort of stuff? I said, no, basically I'm just coming over. I'm going to have a great time. I'm going to work my, work really hard and I'm going to try and do my best for you.
Brilliant. And, I mean, end off.
Yeah, that was my attitude and I kind of kept it on every project. You know, yeah, yeah. I still feel very lucky on every show.
Yeah, yeah. From touching upon all the points that we've discussed so many of them, what would, if you could give one advice or a quote or phrase that you live your life, could be many, something that we've just discussed upon, what would you say to someone or in who wants to become a cinematographer or someone in the creative fields?
I've been thinking about this. I don't know if I've got a quote, but I would say to me, a lot of things come out, like I said earlier, about confidence and commitment. But the ultimate goal, I think, and this to me is something that takes, it separates you from a lot of things, is to be an individual. Like, be yourself, express yourself. Don't conform. You know, there's so many things about what I do in my industry where you could easily do things safe and conform and do it, you know, in a way that is, you know, by the book. But I've learned so much about how the buck stops at basically, you know, coming on schedule and coming on budget, particularly with TV shows. So, I mean, as far as that, I always try to express myself in those shows. Mm. And so when I watch them, I mean, Pose was an amazing experience, my first experience doing a transgender TV show, and it completely changed my life. It completely changed my life. It made me value... say projects that were more important than entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes a sense. So I've come through a very, very humbling experience with TV shows like that, where it was one I particularly looked into the press and you know, people's reactions, where you have given a positive slant and hope to a collection of individuals who, you know, Pose being one where they lived underground, almost, you know, in the New York, you know, ballroom scene. So, sorry I don't have a quote, but I think, you know, ultimately my thing, this also rubs off in life in general, is try and retain your own individuality and expression.
Perfect.
Because if you don't express yourself, you're just expressing somebody else's self. I think it was Orson Welles who said, don't spend your life making other people's dreams come true. Which sounds a little selfish.
No, but you know what I mean. Amen to that. Amen.
You can consume your life with trying to make other people happy, and ultimately that doesn't get you anywhere. If you got to make yourself happy, and the only way you can do that is to be an individual and be expressive.
Well, if you're not happy, no one else around you is going to be happy, because they can feel that you're not happy.
Totally.
Starts from within. And this is what this podcast is pretty much about, is the 360 yourself, is actually understanding yourself and being content within inwards. And then everything around you will work like clockwork, because you're good with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a positivity creates positivity, I think. You know, there's no point... I mean, when I worked in England, there was a lot of times where I got frustrated, because there was a lot of people that were kind of they're kind of grumpy,
yeah.
You know, if honest. And I kept thinking, why are you in a job that has huge responsibility and an effect on other people's, you know, energy levels, and you're not enjoying it? You know, it's really it's a destructive force.
Yeah, I agree.
If I was aware of myself that I was a negative energy on set, then I wouldn't particularly, I'd feel pretty guilty if I was rubbing that off on, you know, and like I said at the start of the conversation, these things rub through. It rubs off on the actors. The actors have a different, you know, energy. So the performance of the scenes are different. The performance of the show is different. The numbers are down and everyone's, you know, it's like, to me, it's a butterfly effect. It isn't just how you react to another person.
I agree. I totally agree. Well, I want to say thank you so much for giving me your time. It's been so enlightening actually discussing all these like topics and actually getting to the root cause of you and how you react to things. So thank you so much.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's of some help.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Well, thank you so much and have the lovely rest of the day in LA.
Thanks, Jamie. Have a good day or evening.
This is 360 Yourself, and I'm Jamie Neal. Thank you very much for taking a moment to listen to our wonderful guests. Please subscribe to our podcast to access all our brilliant guest episodes. They are released every Sunday at 12 p.m. We are available on all listening platforms, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Overcast, Google Podcasts, and Castro. You can also find us on Instagram at 360 underscore yourself, Twitter at yourself360, and our host at Jamie Neal JN. Thank you for listening.